Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The 1-0 is driven to deep left field. This one's way, way back. It's going, going, and long gone. Steven Strasburg puts it over the Atlanta bullpen for his fourth career home run. Steven Strasburg has two hits here in the third inning, and the Nationals lead it 8-1.
That was the Nationals Radio Network, and yes, Steven Strasburg became first pitcher to have two hits in the same inning of a game in Major League Baseball, I believe, in nearly a decade. That's how bad that inning was for Kyle Wright, Tukey Toussaint, and the Atlanta Braves. And welcome back to the Morning Show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 99 The Game. Well, basically, that sucked last night. A hell of a way to start the homestand. Braves suddenly on a three-game skid, and in two of those three games, they've let up 13 runs. 13 to Milwaukee and now 13 to the Washington Nationals. And when you're getting your head bashed in by Steven Strasburg at the plate, forget about on the mound, that's usually not a good sign. I'm not saying we're going to panic, but.
No, when he got that hot shot back to him and it's like he just threw his glove out there and he went in his glove, I was like, yeah, this is it was like, yeah, kiss the, this one's a tough one. I think every Braves fan, when they saw that play, it was kind of like a coming to Jesus moment, like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, this going to be a tough one.
Yeah, Max Fried's on the IL. That's why Kyle Wright got that, where he was pitching well and didn't pitch well again last night. Hasn't pitched well at the major league level yet. They keep giving Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright opportunities, and neither of them can, sort of like Colby Allard last year. And all these, you know, we stop and think about all these, you know, hey, look at the great pitchers down in the Braves, you know, and then a couple have been, you know, I mean, Newcomb and, you know, certainly Soroka, but. And a lot of them, more that haven't than have so far for the Atlanta Braves. And hopefully, you know, some of the guys coming up through the pipeline like Ian Anderson can correct that. Or maybe one of these guys can kind of get it in the right direction. As for the team at the moment, yes, there's still the question about now for the next 12 days, are you going to make a bullpen move? But maybe it's about a starter move too, because Brian Snicker, after the game, admitting what everybody already knows about his rotation.
Well, I mean, we've got some holes in it because we've lost a couple of guys. So, you know, it might take us a little while to get to solidify it. But, you know, the next 2 days and 3 days, we got guys that are capable of going out and throwing six or seven innings. So, I mean, it's fine.
It's fine? I don't know if it's fine. I don't think it's fine.
Honestly, he's in a situation where what can he honestly say? Because you're still trying to figure out your rotation. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And you're talking about what? Soroka still, is it Soroka that's dealing with the finger?
No, Fried.
Fried's dealing with the finger. Yeah, because it's like, man, you got guys, that, you know, somebody was saying last night, you just never know how the skin's going to heal with that. You just never know. So there's that. Guys have to step up, John. Like, in a perfect world, somebody would step up before you have to go out and trade for somebody. That's what you would love to happen. Somebody that can, you know, in a short period of time, 2 weeks' time, can show you, like, hey, you know what? He's shown me enough so that, hey, I ain't got to go out there and mortgage the future or trade any of my assets to get the job done. That has not been the case. You know what the most frustrating thing and disheartening thing that I saw from last night game was the fact that Tukey Toussaint is kind of doing the same thing he's been doing for a little bit. Like, he's just, like, no control, no command. And that kind of hurts, because he's a guy that you looked at early on and were like, hey, you know what? He might have found it. You know, he looks pretty good. He looks like he might have found his home in the bullpen. And for him to have, at this time, to have command issues, that was kind of tough to see. I think Kyle Wright, you look at that one and you're like, okay, we could just hope for the best. You were hoping that he would give you a lot more, way more than he gave you. What was it that I said yesterday? Was like six innings, six runs or something, like six hits, something like that, maybe two runs. That's decent. That was like decent. He didn't even give you that. He didn't even give you that. That's the tough part. He didn't even give you that. So now you're looking at it, and who's on the mound tonight? Julio Teheran.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some pretty decent outings. You want to see what he's going to be able to give you. And hopefully he doesn't, with the spotlight being on him, hopefully he doesn't do what he normally does when he's put in a position where he has to be, you know, counted on. I hope he doesn't turtle up in this situation.
Yeah, well, you're seeing what the Braves are going to do over the next 12 days. What do you do if you're the Braves right now? Because, you know, you have Brian Snicker saying, well, it's fine. It's not fine. It's just not fine. And there are holes in the rotation. Now, are you going to count on Kevin Gausman, who's going to get a start on Sunday, to be that guy? Are you counting on, you know, Nuke's back, Gausman's back? We don't know about Fulton Nevich. You've tried Wright. You've tried Wilson. You've tried so many things. You bring A.J. Minter back. He gets rocked again last night. It's just, it's not fine. There's something else missing here. As we talked about last week, you know, and Hugh, you made a really good point when you said, you know, the most important guy on this team is going to be the next guy, whether that's a, you know, Gausman or Newcomb, the next starter to come in to fill in that kind of hole that exists, because right now it's not fine. You've got three guys you can count on: Dallas Keuchel, Mike Soroka, and Julio Teheran. And that's it. And if you're going into the playoffs with those three and nothing else, You're in a world of hurt. I'm just telling you. Forget about – everybody says the L.A. Dodgers. I'm not sure you get past the Milwaukee Brewers or the Chicago Cubs at that point. I mean, you've got other issues besides the L.A. Dodgers. You've got to get another starter. And if you can't develop one, and I don't know how much more you can wait since the trade deadline is only 12 days away before you make a move. Phone line is always open, 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, same number, Twitter at 929TheGame. And if you're thinking about – This is, you know, again, this goes back to the price we were talking about yesterday. Now, the rumors today, as of this morning, Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays, Mike Minor of the Rangers, Madison Bumgarner of the San Francisco 49ers, according to all the experts, those big-name guys on those big-name websites, we're talking about the big experts of baseball, all three are available. But for Noah Syndergaard, there's a story this morning, because some people are calling the Mets and ringing them up about Zach Wheeler, about Jacob DeGrom, and about Noah Syndergaard. The Mets are asking, according to this story this morning, I believe this is CBS, don't quote me, I think it is, Hugh, the Mets are asking for, quote, a few arms and a leg for Syndergaard. The Mets are still taking calls on Syndergaard, but that it's going to take a 600-pound test line to reel him in.
Yeah, that's not a whole body. That's still not a whole body.
A few arms and a leg.
I mean... Noah Syndergaard, I don't know. I would ask. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to ask. If I'm the Braves, I would ask. You guys are silly. But no, I would definitely ask. What does it hurt? Okay, what
is a few arms and a leg?
Okay, what arms do you want and whose leg? I mean, just like not saying that you would do it, but I would ask. What's the harm in asking? Like, seriously. What's the harm in asking, okay, whose arms and leg do you want? And then maybe I would, you know, consider it. You're silly. Abe's talking about would they take pity.
Good one, Abe.
That's not right. That's not right. But I think, like, what's the harm in asking?
That was a pretty good one. Like, I'll give credit
seriously,
for that one.
Seriously, what's
wait,
the harm in
give him one.
What's the harm in asking? Like, okay, said arms and legs, whose would you like? Just for conversation's sake, and you test the waters. Now, I know this is not going to happen, but if they ask for Tukey and Kyle Wright and
well,
maybe Ender.
No, I think we're talking Austin Riley.
No, I'm just saying. I'm just like that. I'm negotiating from a Hugh Douglas perspective. I'm not going to give you. I'm not going to throw out my good stuff. I'm gonna see what you want. I'm gonna come and say, hey, you. Tukey's had moments in his life where he's looked like he could be. Maybe he needs a change of scenery.
Well, with a 600-pound test line to reel him in, I think if Austin Riley's not involved, they're not even talking to you. I think what they're asking for is, you know, they would say something like, "Okay, we need Austin Riley."
Somebody said "Spooky Tucson." I'm sorry, I saw that. Barrett said "Spooky Tucson." Okay, you can have the show back. Oh, that was funny. It just tickled me so.
Well, they're not asking for Tukey, I don't think. I don't think anybody wants Tukey. It's sort of like they're not asking for pity right now. Nobody knocking on your door. I think if the what is it? But seriously though, as we talk about it, when the Mets say something now, what would they want from the Braves? You probably want to come in and say, okay, we want Max Fried, we want Austin Riley, and we want Drew Waters. I mean something. I mean we're talking about that kind of a haul, Hugh. I mean that's what they would want for Norris Syndergaard is a real 600-pound test line. That's what they're saying. A few arms and a leg.
Like I said, it wouldn't hurt to ask, and let's be realistic in this situation. You know, you always come in when you negotiate. You always want to come in hot just to see because there's going to be a team out there that might be desperate. They might give you exactly what you're asking for. But after all of that calms down, then you say, okay, realist, okay, seriously, let's talk turkey. Let's like you have to gauge the team's interest because there's going to be somebody out there that by them hearing that story and they're feeling real desperate, somebody might do that. Somebody might jump on that immediately. But when you start getting down to brass tacks and negotiating for real, you have to be a little bit more realistic. But again, if I'm the Braves, I'm gonna make a phone. I'm gonna say, okay, cut the BS. What are you really asking for? Like realistically, what do we need to do to get this deal done? And if it's too rich for my blood, then nah, we're not about to do that. Because some of my top prospects, you're not going to be able to touch. That needs to be that conversation needs to be had right off the rip. Austin Riley's off the table.
But then the deal's not getting done.
That doesn't necessarily mean it can't be done, John. Because it might be a situation for them where it might be a salary dump. I don't know. I'm speculating. I don't know. Or for them to throw that story out there, they feel like there's something out there that could potentially get done. And if you're negotiating, you're just going to say, okay. We're not doing this, 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 and this. Okay, if any of those don't work for you, then we don't need to talk. We can move. We just move on.
Well, you just heard the Phillies say that they don't want to, damage themselves in their farm system. The Cubs are now saying the same thing. By the way, the Cubs are out there publicly saying we're not going to damage our farm system. I mean, I think all these teams are kind of banding together, saying basically the asking price is too high because these teams are coming in trying to fleece teams at the front end here.
Okay, John. I guess this is how I'm looking at it. If I'm in a position, okay, if I'm looking around, if I got something that you want, I'm going to come in as high as I possibly can, knowing that all these other teams are going to be bidding for what I want. We talked about in the last couple of weeks, every team, mostly in the NL, everybody has bullpen woes. Everybody has bullpen woes. And you look around the league and most of the teams that are in contention, they're looking for help in the bullpen.
Even the Dodgers.
Yeah. If I'm in a situation where I got something that you want and I'm not in it, I'm going to try to get the most, so I'm going to throw the biggest offer out there. Okay, trade deadline's looming. I'm going to have to start. At some point, I'm going to have to be realistic about what I'm going to get. I'm going to ask for a king's ransom. But at the end of the day, you're supposed to. That's just like selling a car. If I have a car, I'm going to come in. It might be worth this to me, but realistically, it's worth this. So I'm coming in high. And as I sit on that vehicle, and the more I get antsy, the more I want to move, I'm going to start coming down. I'm going to start being realistic about the price because I'm going to start looking around the league and seeing who's made. Because, see, this is the thing. Nobody's made a move yet. Like, there have been some minor moves, but for some of these major arms, nobody's made a move yet. So you're talking about 12 days left. 3 or 4 days from now, somebody's going to get antsy, and somebody's going to get real about what they're really going to get, and then that's when the market's going to start to move. Because if you're real about making a move, you're going to have to start doing something now. You're going to have to start getting those wheels turning now. So, okay, let's go ahead with the big hyperbole. What do we need to do to get this deal done? Because all of that, you're talking about packaging deals and all of that stuff, that might be kind of hard to do.
Which is makes Sunday start, if Kevin Gausman gets the ball on Sunday, really important for the Braves because, you know, now you know how high you have to go. If Kevin Gausman goes out there and shows you that his foot is okay, then maybe you go, okay, we don't have to go quite as high up on the pecking order here as we think that we do in terms of the guy that we get and the cost that we pay for that additional starter. But if he's not any good and you're still sitting around with only three starters, okay. Because I think the Braves, let's put it this way. I'll just make a little bit of a prediction here. I think the Braves are going to make a move. The question is how big a move and at what cost? But the Braves are going to make a move. There's going to be an additional pitcher come in here, or maybe even two. And the question is, how big, and what's the cost, and will it work? All right, a lot to get into, and that's 12 days away. We are knocking on the door of our shows at Falcons Training Camp. I want to have you come by and say hi. That'll be coming up starting Monday. AT&T Falcons training camp on Sports Radio 92 on the game, live from Flowery Branch. And as we look ahead to camp, the mantra of Super Bowl or bust is starting to float around out there, at least from our end. I wonder if it is for year two. As we continue with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game and 92onthegame.com after a CBS Sports Minute.
I kind of beat myself in a way. There's too many free passes. But I made some good pitches that they laid off, and they kind of forced me into, you know, disadvantage counts, and did a good job of continuously laying off those pitches or putting those pitches in play for hits.
I'm not worried about starting right now. I'm not worried about, you know, coming in and, you know, taking anyone's position. I'm just trying to, you know, learn my job and contribute however I can. And that's all.
That was Caleb McGarry, the new first-round left, right tackle of the Atlanta Falcons, talking back in minicamp about the job that he is trying to earn with the Falcons in camp.
I like how he said it, though. He's like, he's going to take it. I mean, that just goes to me. That just speaks about the his mentality. That goes to his mentality to me a lot, and how he's approaching this season. You got to have some nasty about you to play it at this level. And some guys, especially on the offensive side of the ball, some guys have it, some guys don't. It sounds like he's one of those guys that has that nasty in him.
404-741-0929, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, same phone number. As we talk this morning here on the morning show with John and Hugh ahead of Monday's opening camp is, I guess, technically open on Sunday when the players report, but I'm talking about as far as practice, Monday's opening practice, and we will be live at AT&T Falcons minicamp from Monday on for 92 on the game from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. through all our shows. If you're going to Flowery Branch on Monday, doors open at 8:30. Practice begins at 9:30. Do come by, say hi, shake hands, and we will be there to talk to you as we bring you the very latest. Rich McKay, team president, will join us live in the set on Monday in Flowery
Branch. Rich got some explaining to do.
Yep, talk a lot. Yeah, we got a lot.
Talk some stuff.
18-game regular season, pass interference, the CBA, and whether or not this team has done enough to put itself, because something you said earlier, Hugh, is interesting. Every team begins the year at Super Bowl or bust. I get that because that's what you have to be. I mean, the New York Jets think they're going to be a better team, and they will be. They could be the second best team in the AFC East. Every team thinks that they're going to be, you know, if things fall right and we stay healthy and we get a break or two, we can win 10, 11, 12 games and make a run. Everybody thinks that, even the worst team in the league. But the question is, do you have the pieces to actually make that kind of a run? Is Super Bowl or bust legitimate for the Atlanta Falcons? Now, granted, what we want right now is to just be better than 7-9 last year and make the playoffs. But do you have the pieces to win? So if you start looking around at teams, for example, in the area, does Georgia have the pieces to win a national title in football this season? Yes.
I would think so.
Does United have the pieces right now to win the MLS Cup again?
I think that goes without saying.
Yes. Do the Braves have the pieces to win the World Series?
I think a couple pieces away.
Yeah, I would say no. I think they're missing a call. I agree. Now we get to the Falcons. Do the Falcons, with this, all the adjustments they've made with the coaching staff, the offensive line, getting these contracts out of the way, Hugh, do they have the pieces to win the Super Bowl as they sit right now?
Yes, I believe that. I believe they believe that, and I think that they have the roster to get that done. I look at this offense, man. I mean, that has been the staple of the Atlanta Falcons since I've been in this market. It's been that offense, that high-powered offense surrounded by Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman, for that matter, Mohamed Sanu, all those guys. They have enough to score. I look at the matchups in the NFL with the teams they're going up against. They're probably going to be like, you know how when you look at, you know, you look in the paper and they talk about individual matchups, the secondary against the receiving core and the running backs against the linebackers and things of that nature. I think in most games, offensively, they're going to be favored in most of the games that they're going to be in, the Falcons offense. So that says to me that they're going to be scoring a lot more points than their opponent, and the defense is going to be playing with a lead for the most part. Defense just has to be an opportunistic defense. They don't have to be the Baltimore Ravens the year that they won the Super Bowl. They don't have to be that. But they have to be an opportunistic defense. You know, we talk about Desmond Trufant all the time, and I know Randy Mack talks about how if he'd have made just a few more plays, people wouldn't be on him as much about his play on the field if he didn't drop so many balls. They have to be opportunistic. That's what I mean by that. They got to go out there, and when the ball's thrown in a catchable way by the defense, you got to catch it, and you got to put your offense back on the field. Everything is going to be predicated on how many opportunities that you give this offense to score, in my opinion.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you because just, you know, you mentioned that and I look at the schedule and I think just from an offensive standpoint, you know, the two games against the Swampers, right? And maybe the game against the Rams. Those are the only teams that you might be offensive underdogs against. And even then, you know, the Rams have a potent offense, but, and I know a lot of people love the LA Rams. Some people think they have the best offense in the NFL. I don't. I think the Chiefs have the most dangerous offense in the NFL, but I think the Falcons are right there with the Saints for number two. I think they're better than the Rams. Now, granted, things have to go right for you. I mean, all these moves in the offensive line have to work. Brown and Carpenter, Sambrelo, Lindstrom, and McGarry all have to fit in with Mack and Matthews, and it all has to work, okay? It all has to work. I get that. Also, you have to have Devontae Freeman stay healthy and be effective. I get that, too. There are a lot of ifs. But, you know, just taking it for what it is right now, do the Falcons have the pieces? And I think they would never mention this, Hugh. They would never say this. If we go to camp and our show or the midday show or the afternoon guys, if they ask anybody and they say, hey, is it Super Bowl or bust? They're never going to say, we're not talking about Super Bowl. They're never going to talk about it. But I think you see some of the things, at least you glean stuff, right? And if you see what Arthur Blank has given them the green light to do, get the deals done, you know, to Falcons for Life with Grady Jarrett, with Julio Jones, this deal with Deion Jones, the ability to go out and hire, you know, big-name guys like Dirk Koetter and Mike Mularkey to come in and help to give Dan Quinn, you know, the reign to totally change the coaching staff and do what he needs to do. I think all of this points to the fact that there's a confidence, an air of confidence that's going to open camp on Monday with a team that thinks that it can do really big things this year. They won't say that because they don't need to, but I think that that's what they're thinking too.
They think that every year, John. I mean, that's not a stretch. What you're talking about is exactly what's on their mind. You don't have to say it because everybody in that locker room, you can hear it in the conversation that they have. Everybody's been, since I've been here, talked about brotherhood, talked about teammates, camaraderie, family, all of that. It's because they believe they got something special. And they're trying to solidify that with that Super Bowl championship. That's how you solidify that legacy right there, man. And I think that's what Julio's trying to do. I think that's what Matt Ryan's trying to do. Because they're in a position now. You've made all the money you're going to make. And Julio's about to make some more. But when you look at that, man, like, you check that off the list. Make a lot of money. Make a ton of bread. Julio and Matt Ryan, they've done that. They've checked that one off. It's one more box that they're trying to check off. Well, two more if you want to get, you know, technical. Hall of Famer and Super Bowl. That's it. Everybody don't get to be in a position to be a box checker like at that. Like, you might get one or two, you know, get in the NFL, get paid, you know, become a Pro Bowler, whatever. Whatever your box checking, you know, whatever you want to do, whatever your boxes are that you want to check. Those are the last two boxes that these guys are trying to check. And you can hear that. I can hear that in the conversation that they're having. I can hear that in the way that they talk about their preparation. And I think the coach is kind of in that situation too. Dude, I know we don't like to talk about it, but that's still in your mind. Like, that's a memory that will always, regardless if you win one, that's going to always be with you. And the only way that you make that a little bit better and you make that memory go away just a little bit, because it's always going to be there, you got to get one. You got to get one so that way, when you're looking at that box that has that NFC championship ring in it, you're like, oh, this is nice. But, boy, it felt so much better to get this Super Bowl ring because it's so much bigger and it's probably going to be so much more full with real diamonds and so much nicer. That's what you want. So that memory, like, listen, I know we don't talk about it, but that memory is never going away.
Right.
That is never.
Oh,
like,
you're not, and you're not going to salve it with a Super Bowl win, but.
Yeah, you will.
Well,
John, I'm telling you what I know. I know you know a lot about a lot of stuff, but it's never going to go away. But that Super Bowl win, it's going to put a little bit. It'll put a little bit of ointment on that.
All right,
like I said, it's going to be a memory, but it's going to be so much sweeter when you get that win. It's going to be, I remember when. Y'all remember we lost 23? Yeah, I do. But it was so much sweeter, and it made the win that we had so much sweeter. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
like I said, it's never going to go away.
Right.
But I kind of said that in the beginning, that it's never going to go away. It's never going to go away. But when you win it, it'll be a footnote in your history. Because right now, it's one of those memes that it's almost like when you talk about the swamp people and the Saints fans and the fact that they were crying – Mm-hmm. Like they coming back with the 28-3 thing. That is one of those things that's not going to go away until you win one. Got to win one.
Yeah, and hopefully that turns into this year, because you could see, they have an interesting schedule, backloaded in terms of all of the division games are in the second half of the season, and so you have to make a lot of hay early in the season, and you've got some very tough road games right off the jump when you have to go to Minnesota, Indianapolis, and Houston in your first three road games. So they're going to be tested. I mean, the first five games that the Falcons face this year are all potential playoff teams, Minnesota and big playoff teams, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Indianapolis, Tennessee, and Houston. Tennessee, I'm not really sure about, and we get them at home. That's a game, you got to just win some of these games. I mean, that's one you got to win. You got to win when you go to Arizona. But then you got the Rams and Seattle. That's the whole first half. It's not going to be an easy slog. But at the same time, if this offense under Dirk Cutter turns that corner, if it turns out that Steve Sarkisian was the mistake that some people think he was, and the offense gets back to that 2016 form, they're going to become a frightening team to play. That's the good news in all of this. Well, we get caught up in the Braves, and we get caught up in the Falcons, and we get caught up in now in the British Open and all the stories. So we miss stuff, and that's what Denitra's here for, as she brings Sweet Tea next to tell us the stories that we missed. And we'll have her coming up here in a moment with John and you on Sports Radio 92 on the Game and 92onthegame.com.
Miss out on a hot topic?
Yeah.
No worries. Denitra's got you covered as Sweet Tea brings the tea on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, as we always say during the week, we get so caught up in all the big stories, we miss some of the good fun stuff. And Denitra is here to fill in all those blanks.
All righty. So, of course, we have our eyes here peeled on the Open Championship, but a little, I think, what might be hashtag petty ahead of the start of the Open Championship. So Tiger Woods possibly getting ghosted by one of his fellow golfers. He, of course, is playing at Royal Portrait for the first time when the Open Championship got underway yesterday. So in trying to prepare for the tournament the best way he could, Woods hoped to play an extra practice round with Brooks Koepka. Koepka's caddy is from that area, so Woods was hoping to get a round in on the course, maybe pick up some pointers. So he texted Brooksy, but Koepka never answered the text. And, of course, we know the Tiger had that awful round, finishing 7 over par. So do you guys think maybe that was strategic? Maybe Koepka was ghosting Woods on purpose?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, come on, man. You see, I'm pretty sure, you see the text. Now, whether or not you respond, I think he saw it. The bottom line, I think he saw it. And if you come back and say, oh, dog, I was getting ready, yada, 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 man, gone with that. You saw the text.
How many people in the world do not respond to a text from Tiger Woods?
Right.
How many people? I mean, Vladimir Putin not respond? I who doesn't? Who doesn't respond to Tiger?
Right, and you have to have some semblance of a relationship with him, because, I mean, he calls you Brooksy and you've never, said you were insulted by it, so there's some type of interaction there. Now, a little bit better today. It may have worked. It may have helped Brooks Koepka, because, I mean, he is currently tied for 7th in round 2, while Woods is tied for 117th.
I tell you what, though, and another thing, I've kind of heard, like, Brooks is a guy that he uses different things for motivation. So maybe he used this at, I can't believe he called me. You don't need to be calling me. I'm trying to just, who knows?
Right, who knows? And now, in all fairness, allegedly, Koepka, who, of course, like you said, gets a bad rap as well, allegedly, he changed his phone number in early June. So I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
Brooksy, I mean, don't they live like next to each other?
Right,
he wouldn't know this.
So he didn't get a who this?
Yeah. I'm not quite buying that. So someone calls you Brooksy. You live in the same neighborhood.
You changed your number.
A month's come and gone, you've changed your number, and your boyfriend have changed.
You would definitely not be invited to the barbecue. Hey, Brooks, you tried to play me, dog.
Yeah.
You ain't allowed at the house no more.
That's it. Like I said, working for Brooks Koepka. Some more shade possibly going on. I want to get you guys' thoughts on that. But we rarely hear any shade from Peyton Manning, but this time maybe so. So Tony Romo successfully defended his celebrity golf title in the American Century Championship this past weekend, but he had shots fired at him by Peyton Manning just out of nowhere. Manning may have taken, albeit a veiled shot, at Romo, kind of questioning his dedication during his game days with the Cowboys. So the 43-year-old was said to have reportedly turned down a job, Manning that is, as a Monday Night Football analyst because he didn't want to analyze or criticize brother Eli or any of his boys in the league, but he also said this. He said, I saw where Tony Romo said that he always knew wanted to be a broadcaster. Well, I always knew I wanted to be a football player. That's all I knew. I was all in on that job, didn't think about anything else while I was playing it. I think that's good. I think you've got to be all in on what you're doing. Now, Romo did respond. He said, hey, never heard the comments necessarily, but I didn't start thinking about broadcasting until I was contemplating retirement. And so at that point, you kind of go and, you know, you start thinking about what you're going to do in your next stage of life. Now, granted, Peyton may have contradicted himself because a couple days later he said that if he was approached about being an executive in the league, he'd actually give it some thought. But my question is this. You think that was some shade for Manning on a little bit of an indictment on Tony Romo?
Well, I think he kind of looked at it differently than most did. A little bit of shade. I think it's just some people will look at it like that. It's just the way that he thinks. He's a different cat. So I just think it's more of the way that Peyton thinks as opposed to the way everybody else thinks.
You know, and when he said the executive, I started wondering. I saw that and I thought, Hugh, is he actually saying that, you know, as young as he is, maybe he's thinking, we always wonder what Peyton wants to do, right? I mean, does he want to be the head coach at Tennessee or
anything
LSU?
Anything he wants.
Right. Does he want to be the Monday Night Football guy? Or maybe does he want to replace Roger Goodell as the commissioner? And if you think about it, from an owner's standpoint, a player as a commissioner might actually work.
John, I don't think he's just going to step. Listen, that's a pecking order. And I would say the next commissioner in line, in my opinion, would probably be Troy Vincent because he's getting groomed for that job. Peyton, I can't see him leapfrogging guys that have been up there.
I wasn't saying he would go straight to the top of the class. I'm saying he would take a job as an executive with the thought that at some point he might be.
That probably wouldn't happen for a long, long time. Like a long, long time. I don't think so. I think the best part about what Peyton is doing is that he could do whatever he wants to do. Like he has the world is his oyster in a sense. I don't know if he, as far as being an executive, I don't know if he wants to do that. Maybe a GM. Well, I guess the executive GM, that's about the same damn thing. But yeah. I don't see him working for the league. I see him working for more of a team.
For a team, like going back maybe becoming a team president or something.
Yeah, team owner, team president. Yeah, there are so many different directions he can go in. But
But that's great. I think anybody that has those aspirations that used to be a player, that's great.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting comment that Peyton would make because he thinks he analyzes, maybe even overanalyzes everything. So I can't go with him saying that, hey, when I was a player, I was all in just thinking about being a player. Peyton's always thinking ahead. So I don't believe that he just necessarily was focused.
Yeah, so he probably, a little petty shot.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like there was a little bit of hashtag petty in that. And just to wrap you guys up, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of a cautionary tale. You know, here in Georgia, our cell phone bans for use of cell phones, handheld devices, if you will, have been in effect for a little over a year now. And a couple of reports came out recently saying that obviously, especially here in Atlanta Metro, we really aren't abiding by the rules, but maybe we should. Because something not so good happened in Minnesota when a truck driver by the name of Tate Doom, yes, that's really his name, had been formally charged with a crash last October that unfortunately claimed the life of a construction worker and injured another worker on the scene. And the sad thing is this dude had actually been downloading like 14 videos for, we'll call it adult entertainment. And for the last...
You mean the porno?
Dude. Not my words.
Is it called the porno?
I said adult entertainment.
No, it's called the porno, right? The porno?
Per producer Abe, I said adult entertainment. But
porno's a bad word?
I didn't think so, but you know, I go with our partner.
So
our partner says
he
didn't want to use...
He's driving the truck.
Exactly, driving his truck down I-94, downloading not one, not two, John, 14 porn videos.
Yeah.
Yep.
Why you
got to
download them, though?
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, so then he's downloading it, and he doesn't pay,
and then he's not paying attention. And then for the last 2 minutes, I guess for the final download, he decides not only is he going to just, you know, download them,
right,
but then he's going to start watching. And then get this, he then proceeds, I guess he hears the cops coming, you know, like after the accident. And then he proceeds to try to delete all 14 as if it couldn't be traced.
Where was this again?
This was in I know, right? Not in Florida for once. Uh-huh. Minnesota.
It's not a hands-free state, huh? I just asking.
So you got to download the porno? We're going to move on from that one. Oh, you got to download it? You don't have to download it. It's like you could just Google it. You could just do the Googly.
He was, maybe he was Why wanting he to go, right, maybe he was wanting
save,
to go old school. I'm going to
save these for later.
Yeah, so cautionary tale to all my ATL drivers. And you know what, John, just so you know, April 19, 2019, real quick, Minnesota, last state to ban use of handheld cell phones.
There you go.
So this happened before the ban, but he got caught for the crash.
Because we were talking about, you know, that story in the AJC about the cops posing as construction workers.
Yeah.
You see a construction worker, it may be a cop. They're looking there. What they're doing is looking to see if people are on their phones and then getting on their.
Exactly. Cautionary tale, John. You're right about that.
Yep. Cops posing as construction workers so they can see and look into people's cars to see if they're on their phones. So if you're looking around going, see, you see no cops, with the, you know, you got the. Just telling you. All right. When we get. Thank you, Tanitra. Do always appreciate sweet tea. What Jeff Collins, the Georgia Tech coach, said about Clemson, what Ryan Day, the Ohio State coach, said about Justin Fields, and what Jim Harbaugh said about Urban Meyer. All those sound bites next as we start to wrap up all the media days with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the Game and 92onthegame.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.